You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Last week, the New Zealand police published their annual report that showed a case of family violence reported every 4 minutes. Police officials have said this is a growing challenge to deal with, and the reporting rates are still expected to rise to a case reported every 2.5 minutes. Shine's policy advisor Holly Carrington spoke with Charlie about the increase in family violence and what can be done to help vulnerable families.
What's the most common or prevalent reason why family violence rates are so high in New Zealand?
You know, that's a really hard question to answer. I guess our rates, reported rates of domestic violence, are not dissimilar to other Western countries, other OECD countries. But it is terrible, and you know, we really need to get a handle on it. There's not really one reason to point to. I think there's a number of factors to take into consideration. Probably if we're looking at kind of underlying societal reasons why the rates are so high, probably a couple of the major reasons are, you know, rigid beliefs about gender in terms of relationships and roles, that there's still a lot, even though I think people feel like, you know, feminism is here and women have equality. If we look at rates of domestic violence, it's still largely perpetrated by men against female partners. I believe strongly that that is underpinned by, especially the men who are perpetrating the domestic violence, their beliefs around their right and their entitlement to be the one in control of that relationship. And that's, you know, supported by wider societal beliefs along those lines. Yeah, and I think another thing that's very important to take into account when we're looking at rates of domestic violence is in terms of Māori, because a lot of people know that rates of both experiencing and perpetrating domestic violence are disproportionately high for Māori. But the reason for that is actually about colonization. It is not a part of the traditional Māori culture for that to happen. And colonization brought those rigid gender beliefs to the Māori culture, and also have stripped away a lot of the protective cultural factors that used to protect wahine and tamariki from violence. So that's another very important and complex factor to take into consideration.
Moving forward with combating the gender roles, and even the idea that men should be stronger, needs to be taken into account, and that specific Māori values need to be looked at.
Yeah, I think there's the thing about domestic violence is it really needs to be addressed on a bunch of different levels. We need far better systems that respond to domestic violence when it's happening, but we also need to do a lot of work on the prevention side, and that really is about changing our values and understanding of gender and relationships. And certainly working on decolonization is an important factor as well. But there are a lot of really good kaupapa Māori services out there that are doing the work to both prevent domestic violence and decolonize Aotearoa, and also to respond and support wahine and tamariki that experience it. But yeah, we need to kind of do the preventative work at the same time as, you know, fixing our justice system and our child protection system so that it is far more effective at responding to domestic violence.
So what really should be done to improve those services on a governmental level?
You know, the government has taken some steps, and I think one of the really good things that's happened in recent years is the creation of the joint venture, Family Violence and Sexual Violence Joint Venture, so that we do have now you know, there's always room for improvement, but we do have a whole of government response where the joint venture is pulling together the different government agencies that need to be involved, and, you know, working on creating accountability for those systems so that they're not all working in silos. But, you know, we still have, and we've got a long way to go. We're on the ground. Just as an example, people in community probation sending guys that have a community probation sentence for family violence, sending them to a program and not aware that the family court has already referred the same man to a program, and, you know, wires get crossed. We really need much better coordination when we have different systems like that that are cutting across each other. that's just across, you know, the courts, the police, the family court, and the criminal court. It just cuts across. And Oranga Tamariki, we need all of these systems to be much better coordinated.
So really it should be sort of a holistic system that's sort of all working together and all moving forward in the same direction.
Yeah, and I think that is the really tricky thing about domestic violence. And, you know, the justice system we have now was not set up to respond to a crime that is a pattern of behavior over a long period of time between two people who often have children together. You know, our justice system is set up to respond to single incidents of crime, and domestic violence is just, it just doesn't work. So we really need to rethink the whole way that the justice system responds.
Yeah, it was noted in the police report as well how there are lower rates of reoffenders in these current years than previous years, but the rates still show it's a big issue. Is there a reason that there's sort of more new offenders or just still quite a high rate of reoffenders?
I think that the important thing to understand about domestic violence is that most of it has always been unreported, and most of it continues to be unreported. So the increase that we're seeing in the police stats is probably primarily a good thing. It's probably primarily a case of an increase in reporting, but there's not really any way to know that. Yeah, I don't know that it's primarily new offenders. I think when domestic violence gets reported, it's generally nearly always been happening for quite some time before police get involved. So if someone is new to the justice system, I wouldn't assume that they're new as a family violence offender, if that makes sense. And I think the rates are still high because there still are really widespread beliefs out there about the acceptability of using violence within relationships and having one person be in control and of the relationship and control the other person in the relationship. So I think we still have a lot of really widespread unhelpful beliefs that need to be addressed. And I guess the other thing that I'd like to make the point about is that if we're trying to change beliefs about gender and relationships, it's not just going to benefit women, it's going to benefit men, because at the moment we still have men who, the idea of what it means to be a man is really limited. You know, men often find it kind of socially unacceptable to cry or be vulnerable. Those are all part and parcel of the same problem. So if we can liberate women, then we can also liberate men and grow and expand the idea of you know, what it means to be a man and have more healthy beliefs around masculinity.
How can individuals and just communities as a whole sort of help people who are victims of these crimes? Like, is there anything they should be looking out for in other people or other families?
Yeah, definitely. I think having, first of all, an awareness of what domestic violence is and the fact that we're not just talking about physical violence, that we're talking about relationships where one person makes all the decisions. And in fact, in a lot of situations, there's no physical violence. It's really a situation where one person is controlling the other person in a whole bunch of different ways. It looks different in every relationship. So it's looking out for someone who might be afraid to voice their own opinion in front of their partner, might not be able to make financial decisions on their own, might not have any access to their own income, you know, some of those more subtle things. And then being prepared to offer support to that person without judging them, without pressuring them to take any steps that they don't want to take or that they're not ready to take, because you don't know all the detail of their situation and what they're going through. So the best thing to do is offer that non-judgmental support and work on expanding the options and choices that are available to them.
And how should someone sort of approach going up to someone and offering help when it's still a very personal issue and a family issue for the victim?
I think the first thing to be aware of is, you know, if you're going to have a conversation like that, don't do it where anyone else is going to overhear it. And also don't do it in front of children who are verbal and who might repeat what they've heard in front of the parent or the partner that is perpetrating the abuse. So just to have that awareness first. And then really it's just about, approaching it as you'd approach any concern you have about a personal friend or a personal or a colleague or someone you know. Point out what you've noticed and tell them you're worried about them and ask about what's going on and ask how you can help and how you can support them. It is a tricky conversation to have, and that is primarily, you know, what we do when we do training on domestic violence is help people understand domestic violence and then be prepared to have those conversations. So you can educate yourself. There's resources available on our website. There's a page called Helping Someone You Know that gives some really good advice around having these conversations. You can call our helpline and get some advice about how to have that conversation. But, you know, the important thing is to have the conversation and break down that isolation, because so many people who experience domestic violence are isolated and feel really alone and have nowhere to turn to.
That was Holly Carrington, Shine's policy advisor, speaking with Charlie about family violence.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.